This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Well, financial markets worldwide have gotten off to a very good start to kick off 2021 as we just enter the second month of the year. But what to expect for the remainder of this year after what was in many ways a volatile but productive year in 2020, even given all the concerns that we've had over the last 12 months. Joining me now for a 2021 outlook is David Philpotts. He is head of strategy, quantitative equities products at Schroders, here with the top themes for this year. David, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it today.
No problem. Good to be here.
First, let's just start off before we get into the themes directly. Just your overall take of where we are, given that many of these market averages around the world have gotten off to a pretty hot start, even though there are concerns about economic growth, the pandemic, and all the rest.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think we're, you know, particularly since the news of vaccines in November and the resolution to the US election, I mean, markets have just wanted to go up. And you know, clearly liquidity is abundant, you know, policymakers are helping out there. But we are at potentially a sort of a turning point in the sense that, you know, markets are looking ahead now to, you know, what life might be like, you know, on the other side of the pandemic. And, you know, we've started to see a little bit of a rotation, you know, towards some of the, particularly that you know, the beaten up stocks from last year. But that isn't really widespread yet. But at a high level, though, I mean, markets are entering this year, as you say, you know, close to all-time highs, lots of stocks, you know, hitting their, you know, their maximums from the last few years. And, you know, valuations aren't as compelling as they were, you know, even a year ago. And even then, you could have argued that even prior to the pandemic that, you know, that markets were looking a little bit sort of stretched on the back of an earnings base. And that earnings base is now even weaker. So I think in, you know, at the outset, I would say at a very high level that the sort of markets are looking a bit more vulnerable, but that hides a lot of, you know, risk and opportunity across the market, you know, across many, many different themes.
Okay, so would you then define that environment as one that leads towards lower returns in the equity markets and higher volatility, if that's even imaginable, given some of the crazy things that we've seen in the U.S. in particular over the last couple of weeks?
Oh, exactly. I mean, you know, the timing of these things is always really hard. But, you know, taking a sort of medium to long term view, you've got to look at valuations and say, you know, this is the strongest indicator we have to the quantum of opportunity in terms of, you know, potential market returns, you know, and as well as at the stock level as well. And whilst there are some, you know, it's quite extreme examples at the stock level of very excessive valuations to the point where, you know, some stocks might have even entered into like bubble territory, you know, where prices are very detached from, you know, potential, you know, fundamentals, potential opportunity. But at a high level, the next few years are going to look probably quite different to the last few in the sense that, you know, starting valuations are just that much higher. And that always points you to expecting to be more conservative about your expected returns going ahead. And as you say, a lot of uncertainty about how the economy, how companies, how society is going to emerge from the pandemic. Great opportunity for dispersion, as I mentioned earlier on. And that basically boils down to, as you say, more volatility, more swings in sentiment.
When you talk about dispersion and dispersion of returns or value dispersion, can you first define that and then tell us how that translates as far as you're concerned into what happens in the markets?
Yeah, it's been a terrible period for value investors. You know, the market's been very focused on, you know, a narrow group of either, you know, mega cap sort of winners, you know, that are all sort of turbocharged by the impacts of sort of COVID on sort of consumer spending and business behavior. And, you know, that theme's been in play for a long time now and accelerated last year. But more broadly, you know, we've seen the sort of the rise of, you know, what I would call a thematic investing, you know, in terms of where the narrative, you know, is more important than perhaps the fundamentals, at least at this early sort of hype stage where, you know, investors sort of price stocks in a in a popular theme as if they're all going to be winners. And we know from history that that's not going to be the case. But going, coming back to your question about dispersion, what this has caused is a wide range of valuations across the market, greater than perhaps the spread of fundamentals. So you've seen prices for the expensive sort of growth stocks becoming very extreme. But on perhaps more importantly, on the other side of that is the sort of the derating of a longer list of neglected stocks where their fundamentals are still pretty strong, but their prices are almost responding to them, you know, going bust over the next few years, or certainly some sort of very weak scenario for them. And that's caused a sort of a spread of value across the market to increase. Historically, when we've been at this extreme level, it's always come back, and, you know, which has always been a tailwind to value-based investors.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about, as you described, the expensive growth or some of the big name stocks. I was just reading over the weekend that the biggest five companies in the United States are now worth $8 trillion. I believe that's about a quarter of the entire market cap of the U.S. market. We've seen this before, but in 1999, when we had a similar situation where a handful of stocks dominated a major average or the market overall, in 1999, they didn't necessarily all have, you know, cash flows, free cash flows that were equal to their weighting in the S&P, for instance. And this time they do. So is it fair to call that a bubble, or is it just maybe in another way, an overloved sector of the market?
That you're right. That if you go back 20 years, it was quite different. I know a lot of analogies were made about, you know, the tech bubble of 99, early 2000, but it was quite different in the sense that, you know, a lot of it was profitless. You know, perhaps a better analogy would be the Nifty 50 bubble of the early 70s. And you could even dispute whether that was a bubble with hindsight. You know, many of those stocks went on to become, you know, significant sort of market leaders, you know, the top of their class in their own sort of peer group. But that still
Polaroid is gone.
But it still didn't prevent them, you know, being the, you know, the source of funding in the bear market of, you know, 73, 74. And
right.
And I think you're right that the, you know, many of the sort of popular stocks, the ultra mega cap stocks today, are overloved. There's some examples of more extreme valuations. But, you know, it's looking a little bit sort of frothy. And, you know, if I was being charitable, I would just say, you know, a lot of the good news is already in the price for those stocks. So even if they carry on performing well in an earnings sense, and we've, you know, we're just going through the Q4 earnings season, and clearly many of them have beat expectations, whether they'll be continue to be rewarded for that on an ongoing basis in terms of future outperformance, I think is less likely going ahead, because it's already priced in. Whereas the converse is true for the neglected stocks. And so, you know, value investors don't need, you know, the growth stocks, expensive stocks necessarily to come off. They just need a re-rating of the sort of the out of favor stocks. And as I said, we're starting to see a little bit of that now, but it needs to gather steam to really sort of help out value investors.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So we haven't said it specifically, but we like to call it the Schroeder trade in-house, where value outperforms growth, small outperforms big, and the world outperforms the United States. And all of that's been true so far. And even with the rest of the world outperforming the U.S., the U.S. has still done pretty well. So is it going to be the case where the U.S. does poorly, or just going forward, the rest of the world does better, irrespective of what happens in America?
I think this is where another key theme going ahead is it will be more nuanced. So, you know, as you say, it's been very straightforward the last few years. It's been, you know, US growth momentum type sort of investing, you know, a handful of stocks, you know, or you could extend that to a dozen or so sort of market leaders. Going ahead, you know, I think we're going to see much more desynchronized growth as economies emerge from the pandemic at different speeds, and that's particularly true for emerging markets, but also at the sector level. You know, we're seeing, you know, valuations becoming extreme, as I mentioned, and some of that is because of COVID. And so, you know, one interesting scenario is around those stocks is, you know, how much is in the price, as I mentioned. So it's much more nuanced. And at the same time, we've got these longer term sort of structural themes emerging, which will play out over many years, you know, whether it's, you know, sort of healthcare technology, you know, sort of the rise of of the importance of energy transition. All these sort of themes are going to take a long time to sort of play out. So it's an interesting time for investors because we've got a sort of a massive cyclical shock that we're coming out the other side of, as well as a sort of a almost like a changing sort of market dynamic. But it is the case that most of the extreme levels of valuation are in the US, and so. Mm-hmm. Just focusing on that suggests that from a market point of view, that the US is sort of had its sort of good run. If you look elsewhere, particularly areas like emerging Asia, China, Taiwan, South Korea, there you've got a better opportunity in the sense you've got valuations are sort of a more reasonable. You've got the growth. You've also got the sort of cyclicality in the sense that a lot of these economies are geared into world trade, and so you've got a few more sort of boxes ticked there. I think outside of Asian emerging markets, it's much more mixed. You've got fewer quality, high quality companies. They're cheap, but you need to be much more selective, I think.
Let me ask you one final question, because this has been on my mind of late, and it's becoming part and parcel of the policy debate in the United States as to whether or not inflation is going to make an unexpected comeback. Larry Summers, the former U.S. Treasury Secretary, has argued that the relief and stimulus program currently being discussed by the Biden administration may have the unintended consequence of boosting inflation. We've seen Treasury break-evens go above 2%, 10-year note yields at 119, 30-year bond has crossed 2%. Is there a risk that inflation comes back in a way that, as much as we believe is not possible, it still becomes something of a market concern, even if only for a short time?
I think there's definitely an argument for saying, just purely due to base effects, that we're going to see a sort of an uptick in inflation. And it might only be a temporary one. But as you say, we're at a period of fiscal stimulus, monetary policy is very loose. There's a lot of liquidity around. The economy globally is likely to enjoy some sort of form of recovery this year, albeit, as I said, at different sort of speeds around the world. And that will sort of cause inflationary concerns. And as you mentioned, we're already seeing that in steepening yield curve and break even sort of rising. Typically, that's been a good environment for cyclicals, material stocks, and a lot of those stocks are in the value bucket, if you like. So a lot of sort of value based investors are using that argument as an excuse to as a sort of like a positive tailwind to the story. I don't know whether this is going to be a sort of a typical recovery. It's more, what happened last year was more like a natural disaster. It's accelerated some sort of long-term trends that are already in play. It's caused significant corporate scarring. As I mentioned, policy levers are quite restrained at the moment in terms of flexibility for further assistance. So it comes back to where we started. Could be a very volatile period, or at least have more bouts of volatility than perhaps we've become accustomed to in recent years, where it's been a sort of a very narrow, straightforward sort of story about sort of buying the US growth stocks.
Thank you, David. Appreciate it. David Philpotts, head of strategy and quantitative equities products at Schroders. Just keep an eye out, please, for the 2021 outlook piece, which will be published shortly by Schroders, that will further delineate some of the points that David made and offer a guide for the remainder of the year. I'm Ron Insana. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with the US Lens in the near future.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, you can go to schroders.com/theinvestor download. There you can listen to our back catalogue and read related articles. If you want to contact us about anything in the show, email us at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. You can rate, review and subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. New shows are available every Thursday and every Monday from 5 p.m. UK time. But above all, keep safe. And go well. Cheers.